Okay, we're going to take your phone calls now this hour with Jeffrey Smith. Also talk to him about that guide. That is fascinating. Non-GMO shopping guide. Maybe you can walk around the shopping center with it. People look at you like you're nuts, but so what? It's for your health, and that's the important thing. And welcome back to Coast with Jeffrey Smith. Not a bad idea, then, to walk through the supermarket with the guide, right?
Absolutely. We actually sell non-GMO shopping guides just above cost at our site, which fit into pockets, and we actually sell them at a minimum of 25, so because this is designed to create a tipping point. And anytime I give away a shopping guide to a friend, they always say, can I get some more for my family, for my friends, etc. It's a very popular item. And we also have an iPhone application called Shop No GMO, where you can actually select favorites. And they can keep. You can build a little shopping list for yourself. So it's free at the iTunes store. And that's all. The information is also available at the website at non-GMOshoppingguide.com. Now, you mentioned the milk aisle. You don't drink milk, but some people do. And I wanted to point out something, that when Monsanto was still owning the bovine growth hormone, they tried to get the federal government to make it illegal to put claims on milk cartons saying free from RBGH, or bovine growth hormone. And the FTC and FDA, in a rare show of independence, turned down Monsanto. So Monsanto started going after state governments. And now the governor of Ohio introduced and passed a law that requires so much verbiage and disclaimer and large font size on any package that claims that it's GMO-free, that national brands that are selling in Ohio are threatening to remove the RBGH-free label altogether, setting us back years. And so we have on our website at responsibletechnology.org, in the upper right-hand corner, we have an action alert where you can send a letter to the governor of Ohio demanding that we have the right to know if our milk is from drugged cows. And we even have phone numbers in there if you want to call. It would be great to win back, you know, to make sure that we protect our right to know if we're drinking drug milk or feeding it to our kids. And for extra motivation, you should know that the milk from cows that have been injected have higher levels of pus, higher levels of antibiotics, higher levels of bovine growth hormone, and most importantly, higher levels of a hormone called IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1. Which is linked to higher rates of cancer and higher rates of fraternal twins. In fact, one study showed that the higher rates of fraternal twins in the U.S. compared to the U.K. are probably due to the fact that we allow bovine growth hormone in our dairy herds, and it's banned in the U.K. and almost everywhere else.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Whitty Island in Washington. It's Galadriel. Hi, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. You know what? This is kind of bringing up for me. Has anyone looked into if this is what's killing our honeybees?
It's an excellent question. And here's the deal. It would not be the sole reason, because the colony collapse disorder is also found in countries where they don't plant GMOs. But the amount of honeybees that are dying in the U.S. is greater. And so it is possible that it is a contributing factor. In fact, there was a study where they allowed bees to pollinate on these BT corn crops. So the BT is designed to kill the certain insects, but doesn't kill honeybees. But it turns out that in the study, the bees that pollinated the GM corn ended up infected with a virus, and those that pollinated the non-GM corn, or collect pollen from that, did not. And we also know from another study done in Germany that the pollen that they collected, the genes from that pollen transferred into the microorganisms living inside their gut, just like it happens in humans. So it could be long-term exposure. What is more likely to be causing the major cause for colony collapse disorder is a seed treatment insecticide called neonicotinoid insecticides. They were banned in certain countries in Europe, like in Italy, and the next year, the colony collapse disorder disappeared in Italy, except in one case where the farmer was still using the seeds with seed treatment from the year before. And unfortunately, the U.S. government has not decided to ban the neonicotinoid insecticides. Now, it's interesting that these seed treatments were used in big quantities because of the fact that the the certain genetically modified corn crops were not working particularly well in the first few weeks. And this was to kill the corn, the corn rootworm. And so these companies added this chemical which is known to cause disruption in the bee's ability to navigate back to the hive. And that's what's happening there. You open up the hive and they're gone. They're missing. So the bees aren't getting back to the hive. And what happens is they put a lot of these on the corn plants so that it would cover the insecticide activity for the first few weeks, because the gene that they inserted wasn't doing the job. Now, there was a question, where are the bees getting access to this particular neonicotinoid insecticide? It turns out there's a little secretion on the plants. And so when these worker bees work all night to fan the queen and control the temperature in the hive, when they're let out in the morning, they immediately go to the first source of nutrition, which is these little water drops, which carry a lot of nutrients from the plant, but it also carries high levels of this neonicotinoid insecticide, which is probably why they lose their direction and ability to get back to the hive. It's probably why it's not proven, but there's a lot of evidence suggesting that that's the reason.
Okay, there you go. Thanks. You know, Monsanto was the first to produce saccharin. Did you know that?
And they also produced DDT and Agent Orange and PCBs.
Caffeine and vanillin they introduced to Coca-Cola.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yep. They've had their hands in a lot of things. Tim in Louisville, Kentucky, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Tim.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for the food for thought that's not genetically modified.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask if you are familiar with, there's a documentary out there called The Corporation, and I believe Monsanto's mentioned in there. They basically psychoanalyzed some corporations and found that they were sociopathic. And I kind of, you know, get a creepy feeling about, you know, what you're talking about. And, you know, what can we do other than, you know, not buy some of these products?
Well, first of all, The Corporation is an excellent video. It's so good I actually sell it on our site, particularly because it has a section in there where it interviews two investigative reporters that worked for a Tampa TV station that was bought by Fox News. And they had been working on an investigative report on genetically modified bovine growth hormone by Monsanto. And they had advertised that they were going to release the four-part news series, but 3 days before it went to air, a threatening letter from Monsanto's attorney caused the show to be canceled. And so it was postponed. They had the station manager review the whole documentation. Everything was accurate. He said it was a go. So they rescheduled it to play the next week, and then another letter from Monsanto's attorney, this time specifically threatening, quote, dire consequences to Fox and its owner, Rupert Murdoch, caused them to cancel the series. And they, according to these reporters, they were offered hush money to leave and never talk about RBGH again. They refused, and so they were led through a series of rewrites for months and months, 81 rewrites. And every rewrite, they had to make it softer and softer. Finally, they were asked to say that there's no difference in the milk, and they refused because they said even Monsanto's own studies show more IGF-1, which is linked to cancer, more pus, etc. They were fired, and they sued Fox, and the jury awarded one of them $425,000, saying that she was fired because she was threatening to go to the FCC to blow the whistle on the fact that Fox was going to lie on television and violate a law. Well, Fox appealed and won because it's apparently not illegal to lie on TV. It's just a guideline, but not a law. And the whistleblower laws in Florida only protect you if you're threatening to go to the FCC over violating a law, not a guideline. So, unfortunately, these poor investigative reporters had to cough up close to $200,000 in paying some of the lawyer fees for Fox.
Will GM foods go away, or is it too late?
Well, 100% it will not go away until we find some new technology to clean it up. But we have the ability to knock it out of the park. You see, I'm actually expecting it to go away. The fastest growing claim among store brands last year was non-GMO. And we find that when people have access to our information, they want to change their diet on the spot. I have a film on my website called Everything You Have to Know About Dangerous Genetically Modified Foods. It's a keynote speech that I gave to 1,000 people. At the beginning, I edited this out, I asked people, Rate yourself from 1 to 100 how vigilant you've been at avoiding GMOs in the last week. And 1 to 20 is no vigilance, 100 is high vigilance. How many people are 1 to 20, 20 to 40, et cetera? So I poll the group. And then after an hour of describing all the problems that can go on, I say, now rate yourself from 1 to 100 how vigilant you'll be next week. And everyone is now far more vigilant. And it's not just in this group. It's doctors. It's food service executives. Any single demographic that I speak to in the United States, they change their diet habits on the spot when they realize how dangerous GMOs are. So now we're raising money to produce a film that's far more powerful than a PowerPoint presentation that will really convey these dangers in the words of scientists, in the words of the farmers, with pictures, and we want to release it in non-GMO months. So we're raising the money this week, actually, to start filming in June, or to finish our filming in June, because we've already started. And we think that that, plus all the materials that we've been putting out there and reaching millions of people, will actually mobilize the people that we need in the targeted demographic groups, in the health-conscious shoppers, in the parents of young kids, in the religious groups that are against the GMO issue altogether, for healthcare professionals. We see there's a lot of people receptive to our message. And if we only need 5% of U.S. shoppers to avoid GMOs, the math is on our side, because most Americans, 53%, say they would avoid GMOs if they were given a choice, if it were labeled. So we have this portable labeling in our non-GMO guide.
Well, we see what happens in the Gulf of Mexico, Jeffrey, when we play around with Mother Nature.
Absolutely. And the thing is, the catastrophe in the Gulf is horrible, but it will dissipate over time. With GMOs, the self-propagating genetic pollution that we've released already can outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste. It is absolutely an irresponsible technology. Maybe someday, when we understand DNA, we could safely and predictably manipulate the DNA for the betterment of health and the environment. But right now, it is so fraught with unpredicted side effects, it will be a burden on all future generations.
Let's go to Santa Ana, California. Alva, it's your turn. Hi, Alva.
Hi, George. First time I got on with you.
Great.
I got on once with George a long time ago. Hi, excellent show tonight, Jeffrey. Hey, of all the things I could bring up, you know, polysorbates or monoamines like glycerides or, you know, MSG or aspartame, or, you know, I could go a lot of different directions. I'd like to focus on the hydrogenated oils, which they term now trans fats. And it was kind of insulting because all the many thousands of people that got their arteries clogged up never, you know, were like my parents, their generation believe everything that everybody tells them. These people that are supposedly, you know, the doctors in their field of expertise said to stay away from the saturated fats. And so my parents would buy margarine. Plus, it was a lot cheaper. And, I guess now we know that the, oil and water doesn't mix unless you use equal amounts and spin it at thousands of RPM and emulsify it. But you get these oxygen molecules within your hemoglobin, and it scars the inside of the vascular system. And this is where, you know, the platelets will collect and clog your arteries.
You are right.
Yeah. You know, Elva, they knew about that years and years before trans fats became a negative in public opinion. A good friend of mine was lecturing about it in the 1980s. And so you have to look at some of the early adopters or the detectives out there who are giving the truth long before the corporate controlled regulators are going to tell it to the population. For example, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine, we mentioned them earlier, they are like right out on the detective level looking for signs of new diseases and their sources. They were the first organization to identify Gulf War syndrome, food allergies, chemical sensitivity, and a host of other things. And they, last year on May 19th, came out with a statement saying that all doctors should prescribe non-GMO diets to all patients. You won't find that with the American Medical Association yet. You'll probably find that in the future, like trans fats took time to get identified. And so we're suggesting to people to follow the advice of these advanced doctors groups and not wait for all the research to be done and not wait for your own physician to necessarily hear about it.
Can I just say one more thing? You know, that's, along those lines, I've just found that whatever they're promoting inordinately, whether it be stay away from salt and fat, and I just think the opposite. You know, I think our body makes fat, it stores fat, we could subsist on it, possibly even we could synthesize those stored ketones into a great many things that our body needs. But I just like to say the aspartame, you know, is in all the chewing gum. All the kids are chewing chewing gum. All the kids are fat because it was originally, wasn't that a used, they were thinking about using it to bulk up cattle, weren't they?
Well, actually, it was a drug, and someone who was working with it had a sandwich and had handled the aspartame with his hands and realized it was sweet, and so it shifted from a drug to a food. And I know
After effect of an anti-ulcer drug, I think.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that next hour, as a matter of fact. And as we come up to the break in a few minutes, Jeffrey, I want you to give out these websites again because I'm getting fast blast like crazy from
okay.
People.
First of all, we have a toll-free number for orders only, and that's 888-717-7000. So for those that can't order online, you want to call 888-717-7000 in the morning when they open up. We have non-GMOshoppingguide.com. And there you can download a printable version of the shopping guide.
16 pages, right?
Yeah. You can download a two-page version, which is all condensed, and just put it in your pocket.
Good.
And then we also have responsibletechnology.org, responsibletechnology.org. And there, please sign up for our free email newsletter and also go to the action alert to tell Governor Strickland of Ohio, take his hands off of our milk. We don't want drug milk. So we have a lot of free resources. We have free videos, free podcasts, free articles, a lot of stuff. We're a nonprofit organization. Please become a member and enjoy.
How are they trying to shut you up, Jeffrey?
This is very interesting. This is a very interesting question. When I released Genetic Roulette 3 years ago, we put a two-page spread of every single health danger that we found, 65 different health dangers, with a summary on the left side, which I say is for the attention deficit politician, mm-hmm. and detailed cited text on the right. And I appealed to the biotech industry. I said, please respond to each of these 65 risks. And I would tell regulators around the world, even presidents, if they can't counter each risk with independent, rigorous scientific data, then they have no right to continue putting their products on the market. Well, finally, in April, after 3 years, they released an entire site dedicated to supposedly countering the risks of genetic roulette. All they did was dust off the same lousy conclusions and bad science that we had showed was wrong in the book itself. They misquoted the book. They have all these different ways that they try and prove that there's absolutely no problem with GMOs. And so what they do now, because genetic roulette has become so powerful, it's in many different languages, it's being used all over the world, it demonstrates with irrefutable, overwhelming evidence that GMOs are unsafe, they are trying to, you know, distract, deny, and distort the evidence. Now, they haven't actually threatened me, they haven't filed a lawsuit, and that's because when I put out my first book, which was Seeds of Deception, I was aware that another book was about to be published, but 3 days before it got off the printer, a threatening letter from Monsanto's attorney caused the small publisher to freak out. Not wanting a lawsuit, he canceled the publication.
We'll be back in a moment. Well, next hour, Dr. Betty Martini joins us, and we talk about aspartame now. But when we come back, we'll take final phone calls with Jeffrey Smith on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, not a lot of time left. Let's go to Salt Lake City. Brooke, first-time caller. Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Well, I was just calling. I had some questions because my daughter's 8 years old now, but when she was born, she was full term, but she was only 4 pounds. And they were telling me that, like, her placenta and everything, they didn't develop all the way, and they didn't know why they didn't develop. Like, her organ, like, the cord would just pop off. When she's born, she also developed an immunity disease that was really rare. And they said they don't understand what's like wrong with her. She's, her stomach muscle walls and stuff aren't developing. Right. And I was just wondering if like that could have anything to do with it.
Well, it's impossible to say given the information. You know, if you look at the babies of animals fed GMOs, you have different things that are wrong. But even then, you can't say for sure what the mechanism is, because all too often when people find high death rates among babies fed GMOs, whose parents were fed GMOs in terms of animal feeding studies, they don't actually do follow-up studies, which are normally should be done, to identify the mechanism. Like with the GM soy, we don't know if it's the extra herbicides on the soy. We don't know if it's the collateral damage that occurred in the soy plant that has some kind of new problem, or maybe the inserted gene, or nothing at all. And so it's too preliminary in terms of information to draw that conclusion. But there's so much evidence and so many patterns that form, that converge on the conclusion that GMOs are unsafe. We say, let's not wait until they've done the research they should have done long before they introduced this stuff. And let's especially keep it away from parents, because we know that there's different periods of time while the infant is in the fetus where nutrition or lack of nutrition or toxins or whatnot can make changes. And so we know that that's a very sensitive time for food. And so one of the strong recommendations that we have is for pregnant women to avoid eating GMOs and also to avoid feeding them to children. But again, we can't say that your child is particularly related to that issue.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Brooke. Appreciate it. Next up, we go to Dave in Kansas City, Missouri on the wild card line. Go ahead, David.
Yeah. Hi, George. Hi, Jeffrey. Kudos both of you guys for the work you do.
Thanks.
I was wondering, has there been research about multiple sclerosis, the effects that GMO products might have on that?
Unfortunately, there's only one human feeding study. You see, when you prove a drug, there's a four-phase approval process. It includes long-term animal feeding studies, testing it on healthy populations of adults, testing it on those that are stricken with a particular drug's need, and then post-marketing surveillance. None of that is done with GMOs. In fact, typically, if they approve a food supplement that's new, the FDA does require testing and labeling, but what they did with GMOs is they called it generally recognized as safe. Now, typically, if you're going to call something generally recognized as safe and waive all requirements for studies, there's two very strong precedents that have been in place every single time before GMOs. One, there's an overwhelming consensus that the product is safe, and two, that there's a massive amount of peer-reviewed studies or the equivalent showing that it's safe. With GMOs, they had neither. Their own scientists thought it was dangerous. There was no peer-reviewed studies whatsoever, and yet what many believe was a violation of the law, the FDA said that the companies themselves can determine whether the foods are generally recognized as safe, and therefore no testing is necessary. So we don't have a body of knowledge. We have about three dozen peer-reviewed published animal feeding studies that are of the quality of an academic study. What Monsanto says is, oh, no, there's 100 or 200. Those are mostly commercial studies that have nothing to do with real safety. So we're kind of shooting blind here, and we've got to use what information that we have. And certainly something as sophisticated as a question, do GMOs cause multiple sclerosis? It's too detailed. It shouldn't be. We should have thousands of studies on this before it gets in the market.
Right. And we definitely need mandatory labeling laws.
Absolutely. In fact, on our site, Obama told us that he would require mandatory labeling if elected. I live in Iowa, so he came to my state and told us that. But he hasn't done it. So on our site, there's a petition urging him to require labeling and telling him what type of labeling. Now, as far as whether GMOs are related to certain things, a lot of people think that GMOs are related to allergies. In fact, soon after GMOs were introduced to the UK, soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. We know that soy that's genetically modified has as much as a sevenfold increase of a known allergen. It has also the results of a skin prick test show that it might cause reactions to GM but not to non-GM. We know that when GM soy was fed to mice, the digestive enzymes were suppressed, and that could also lead to allergies. We know that the herbicide residues on the soy might have a result of reaction. So there's all sorts of reasons why genetically modified soy might cause an increase in allergies, but there's been no follow-up studies to show why that mechanism is there.
Jeffrey, do you think a biotech scientist involved in this field knows that there could be something wrong and just won't say anything because it's income and God knows what else?
Well, here's a true story of a former Monsanto scientist who told me that when his colleagues at Monsanto were doing safety studies on the milk from cows treated with RBGH, they saw so much IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor 1 hormone, in the milk that these three scientists refused to drink milk after that point unless it was organic. One even bought his own cow. He also said that other scientists discovered problems, with genetically modified corn on certain rodents. And what they did, instead of taking the corn off the market or not submitting it for approval, they decided to rewrite the study to hide the effects. I talked to another former salesman for Monsanto, and he was told by PhDs that there was new uncharacterized proteins that were somehow created in the cotton plants that they were genetically engineering, that it might be dangerous, but they didn't know, and they weren't going to even investigate. They were just going to feed the cotton stubble and seeds to cows, even to dairy cows. And this guy was freaking out. He said, well, you know about mad cow disease, what they feed to animals could actually affect humans. He tried to raise the issue in Monsanto. He said he was ostracized. He said he was basically kicked away from his team. He decided to leave the company, saying he wasn't going to be part of this disaster. So I've talked to former Monsanto people, and I've talked to people who work for Monsanto, and when I ask the tough questions, they always go back to the lame excuse that they're willing to risk the population because we need GMOs. And they claim that it's going to feed the hungry world, and they give me statistics, which I know these cases, I know that they're sincere, but I know that they're wrong. They absolutely don't need GMOs to feed a hungry world. In the current state, they actually work against feeding a hungry world for many reasons.
Let's go to Pismo Beach, California. Tony's with us. Hey, Tony, thanks for calling.
Hey, you guys have hit on a subject that's been a pet peeve of mine for a few months. I'm in a business that hauls hundreds of tons of strawberries out of Central California. And I've noticed over the years subtle changes in the strawberry. And I started doing some research on it and found out that some brainiac scientist discovered that there's a natural antifreeze in the blood of a codfish in the North Atlantic that they've actually spliced into the gene of the strawberry. And that's how come they're able to get them year-round now. And the flavor, the texture, everything about the strawberry is not what it used to be. And, and I'm just so upset because I cannot find a real strawberry anymore.
Well, Tony, the good news is, Tony, that particular codfish gene that was put into strawberries was only experimental, and it was never released commercially. I think the protein that it was producing was bitter. Now, there's a lot of changes in the food supply, and what they're doing is they're changing through natural selection. They're changing things like strawberries so that they can last longer when they're being shipped. They can be picked mechanically or whatnot. And so the changes that you're seeing are not related to genetic engineering. They may be related to selection, but not to genetic engineering, because although they did genetically modify a strawberry with an antifreeze gene from a fish, it was never put on the market.
Okay. Then why has the texture changed so much? I mean, now they're hard and sour. They used to be sweet and succulent and small. Now they're huge, gigantic, you know.
And they're bland.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. You see, right now, our whole agricultural system has been centralized or not localized, and so you have to ship things, haul them for long distances, and there's a lot of channels it has to go through. So
you pick them green, don't you?
Exactly. They pick them, and so there's big white in the middle, and they're sour. So I don't know the specifics of how they created these new strawberries. It's not my area, but I do know that if you go to Europe and you eat certain fruits or vegetables, it's like an awakening. Bells ring. Music plays. It's like, I've never had a peach like that I had, you know, near Assisi in Italy. It's just unbelievable. And you realize we've been kind of ripped off by an industrialized food supply that's focused more on these delivery mechanisms with big companies rather than on providing healthy and nutritious food.
Same with cherries. You ever eat a good cherry compared to one that just wasn't ripe?
Oh, yeah.
What a difference.
Amazing.
Thanks, Tony, for your call. Let's take a few more. Janine in Chattanooga, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. Hi, Janine.
Hi, I have two quick questions.
Okay.
I've had lost beautiful, beautiful dogs to cancer, probably because of the dog food, so I switched to natural choice. My second question is, I'm a recovered alcoholic, and I have friends that are recovered alcoholics. All of us are just addicted to Diet Coke. I drink 3 2-liter bottles a day. I cannot stop the Diet Coke.
Okay, so in terms of the dogs, after giving a talk in Pennsylvania a couple of years ago, I was approached by a veterinarian, and she said that she has seen a lot of cancers in dogs since about mid-90s, 1996, when GMOs were introduced. Now, this is the kind of correlative evidence that is basically leads epidemiologists and researchers to do further research. We can't make a conclusion. But I found it very interesting. And, of course, dog food contains GMOs. And I've spoken to pet owners who've switched to non-GM food for their pets and have found an increase in an improvement in health. Of course, I've talked to parents who've taken their kids off of GMOs and have the same thing. So you may want to check the ingredients of the current dog food. Just because something says natural does not mean it's non-GMO. Check with the company. And the thing is, I would definitely contact companies and ask them about GMOs, because if they start hearing from hundreds or thousands of people, they'll realize that the GMO tipping point is on its way, and they'll take steps to remove GMOs because they're hearing from you. As far as the Diet Coke goes, that I know that at one point it contained aspartame. It might still. So I think that'll be a subject for the next hour with Betty Martini, who's an expert in that and a brilliant speaker on that topic. But I would say very, very importantly, stop eating aspartame if you can. That's my personal opinion, because I think that even if it weren't genetically engineered, it would still be dangerous. It breaks down into three poisons, et cetera. But all this will be covered in the next hour.
Okay, let's go down to Anya in Salt Lake City, west of the Rockies. Hi, Anya.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, are any supplements genetically modified?
Unfortunately, a lot of them are. If you go on our website, nongmoshoppingguide.com, and go to Invisible Ingredients, you'll see things like B12 might be produced from genetically modified microorganisms. Now, when you produce from a microorganism, what you do is you put a gene in bacteria or fungus or something and turn it into a factory to produce something that you want to use in the supplement. Now, in the 1980s, there was a company in Japan that genetically engineered bacteria to produce an amino acid called L-tryptophan, which was sold over-the-counter in the United States. Now, the process of genetic engineering almost certainly resulted in contaminants in the tryptophan, which led to a deadly epidemic, killing about 100 Americans and causing 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick. And when the FDA testified to Congress about this epidemic, they failed to mention that genetic engineering was involved. They hid the information and decided to use an excuse to get all L-tryptophan taken off the market, even though it was only the brand that was genetically engineered. Now, the symptoms were screaming to be discovered. The symptoms were unique, they were serious, and they came on quickly. And so, even though they were screaming to be discovered, it took 4 years for the epidemic to be identified, and it was almost missed. So it begs the question, are the GMOs foods on the market creating problems that aren't unique and serious and come on quickly? If they took 20 years for onset or if they were common symptoms like cancer, we may never know.
Okay, let's go to Rhonda in Wilmington, North Carolina, first-time caller. Hi, Rhonda.
Hi, George. I love your show.
Thank you.
I think Jeffrey is one of your best, most important guests. And I just want to tell you real quick, I just threw away 2 packs of gum in the trash can. In the past 2 years, I've been diagnosed with a rare skin disease, and I have lots of stomach issues that just popped up that now I'm on Prilosec every single day. And I tried to get off of it, and I can't get off of it because then after 3 days, I have all this huge stomach pain. And you were mentioning how sometimes the pesticides can live in our intestines. How can we get it out, and how could we know if it is there?
Well, it's a very important question. It's one of the most common questions I'm asked. Like, what happens if the gene that produces the pesticide in corn transfers into the bacteria living inside our gut and continues to produce that insecticide within us? You know, there hasn't been a study to confirm that it happens with corn. There was a study that confirmed it happens with soy, and no follow-up was done. And so we don't know how often it happens. We don't know if it's a lot of bacteria or a small amount of bacteria, and we don't know the medical implications, and we don't know how to clean it up. I'm sorry, it's a horrible concept that we have living pesticide factories possibly inside our own intestines, but we have no research. As far as getting rid of the gum, I know when I first published Genetic Roulette, in Seeds of Deception, I would be getting these emails from people, and it was like the email subject was vibrating, and it appeared, it turns out they were at the cupboard stage. They were going through their cupboard and reading things and throwing them out.
Oh, like crazy. I've done that too, Jeffrey.
Yeah, yeah. So cupboard stage is a common thing, and congratulations, Rhonda, for taking good steps in terms of getting rid of that gum.
Hey, I like unsalted sunflower seeds. Are they okay?
Absolutely. See, they're not part of the eight. They're not. But sometimes if you buy nuts and you see the oils that they roast the nuts in, it's cottonseed oil. So you have to read the ingredients.
Good point.
Yeah.
Good point indeed. Let's grab Chris in Las Vegas, Nevada real quickly. Chris, go ahead.
Yep.
Hi.
How you doing?
Okay.
I had a question for you. I like to drink beer. So I was wondering, is there GMOs like Anheuser-Busch, or, you know, is there organic beer? I mean, I want to make my own, but if you buy the kits, do they have GMOs in them also?
All right. What do you think, Jeffrey?
There's some beer that uses corn. And so if you use a beer that doesn't use corn in its production, it'd probably be non-GMO. Now, sometimes yeasts are GMO in processing, different enzymes that are used in the processing. I generally don't talk about them because, you know, those are hard to identify. They're hard to know when it's used. They're not listed in the ingredients. And you don't want to create a situation where it becomes so difficult for someone to eat, they just give up.
Jeffrey, 30 seconds. Why isn't wheat GMO?
Well, they want to create GMO wheat. In fact, Monsanto was pushing for it, but in May 10th, 2004, they said they're not going to do it because the wheat industry had said they weren't going to do it. So Monsanto's been quietly working with the wheat industry, giving money to the wheat organizations, et cetera, so trying to convince them to say that wheat will be saved because of GMOs. It was a complete lie, but a lot of people are buying into it. So they want to introduce wheat, they want to introduce rice, they want to introduce all the major commodities. So it's up to us to create the tipping point of GMOs to protect our food supply, to reclaim a non-GMO food supply, and this is what the Campaign for Healthier Eating in America is all about.
All right, Jeffrey, thank you so much for the information. Just be wise. We'll be up next as we talk with Betty Martini about aspartame. That's next on Coast to Coast AM.